Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our usually regular Monday stream.
Hello.
Say the line, Evelyn.
No, I won't say the line.
Say the line.
No, we're back.
We're back. Yes, we're back, guys. We are back after our slightly extended absence. Although I did sneak in a stream clip at the end of last week, but we have been taking some sanity time, really.
Yes, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of an explainer where people sort of tune in.
Yes.
And they make sure to refresh and whatnot. I don't know, things have been really busy. A lot of things haven't quite worked out that we've been trying to do recently. And, you know, as much as we sort of put forward to people, you know, maybe 6 to 8 months now initially, that we wanted sort of people to be a bit more committed with some of the stuff in terms of support, and in turn we would try and do more. And I think we have done for the most part.
Yes,
and
we
people
have.
Seem pretty happy with both the streams and also the writing, whether short or long form, and also the clips, which seem to do a lot better than I think they would, but maybe they're a lot more digestible, as people might suggest.
YouTube's quite getting towards that.
At the end of the day, until like Ben Shapiro chaps our door tomorrow and offers us like £1 million to do this forever, other things have got to come first, I'm afraid. And sometimes that's either personal things or career stuff or health things. And it is ultimately a consequence of not the fact that, oh, some days we don't want to do this, but some days we are so busy that we don't have the time to dedicate to doing it properly.
No, I don't. Well, you only do it wrong. So really, I think when we don't really have time to do it, we don't do it. We don't want to half-ass it. We don't want to get on the content treadmill.
Yes.
Even though that kills, basically, the channel's analytics have died. And YouTube is basically telling me, upload, 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 because you get like weird kind of, you got less subscribers this week than like YouTube really pushes that in your face.
Yes.
So do again, I'll go through our regular shilling. Do interact with the videos if you do want to keep seeing them.
Yes,
that's the
do.
Best kind of free way to help us. Al Gore's rhythms are
greatly appreciated.
Yeah, they are greatly appreciated and sometimes on our side. In terms of an update for, I know people have been asking about the No More stuff. There'll be an announcement on Wednesday. I know you want to do it today, but I've not had time to set it all up.
Yes.
So it will be on Wednesday. We'll be announcing the next in-person event, which is quite exciting. If you guys want to support us, God, that's,
did you? Whoops.
a little preview for later. We do have the Ko-fi link, which is kind of our default donations link. It will get read if you want it to, and it won't get read if you don't, basically. You can leave a message.
I mean, someone's making the point in their chat, better subscribers, not more subscribers. I mean, exactly. And this is the thing that we will probably have to think about ourselves, at least, is we know there's a core base of people who are willing to support in terms of either large donations via the Substack, you know, essentially once a year, twice a year, or, you know, the occasional donation via the Ko-fi, your channel members. So there are people out there.
Yes.
Who are engaging with the backlog, they're engaging with the written stuff, and they are basically ready and waiting for us to do stuff. So we are always in knowledge of that. We always want to provide you with something useful and mildly entertaining at the same time. But
yes.
You know, it's just certain things have to come first for us to be able to live comfortably, quite frankly.
Yes. We do try, but this is kind of a volunteer operation. I have hopefully found work again, even though it's contract work. I'm on short-term contract work at the moment, whilst looking for something permanent. For those who want an update on that. For those who want an update on the weather, it's been quite nice.
It's been bloody lovely, which really took the sting out of my theatre today after a course of racial aggravation from the post office.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of my bloody store, out of my bloody store, you scum.
I was getting flashbacks of the chalk dip incident from being a friend of mine being banned from I got banned from a shop for it by association, but good times, but bloody hell bloody, yeah, very very bloody hell bloody. But we shall, that's enough preamble, I think.
Yes.
Today we are talking about it's kind of a wider subject. We don't tend to do traditional subject areas. We don't tend to talk about a specific piece of news, even though we will be going over some news articles in this. It's really about the environment people find themselves in terms of news,
yes.
In terms of the way news is served. And it's something that is so pervasive, we don't really think about it very often. It basically, let's dive right in, guys.
Yeah, I mean, think about it and maybe in terms of, we've got a few worked examples to go through towards the end, but how to always, at least to the best of your abilities, do your own fact-checking, as it were.
Yes.
And I don't mean fact-checking in terms of the correcting people, but genuinely understanding what purpose an item of media serves.
Yes. The first thing I want to talk about is defaults. I know we've been going through a bit of a behavioral economic stuff and behavioral science stuff and things like that, but it is a very powerful part of how this is done. There's a lot of articles online this that are by what are kind of click farmers, to be honest with you. But if you type in Google News into Google, basically what you'll get is pages and pages of people going, how do I get rid of Google News alerts? Mm-hmm. How do I stop it from coming up when I swipe left? You are inundated with news.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
the way I put it is, it's not that you have unprecedented access to news; it's that the news has unprecedented access to you.
Exactly, and it's, we will get more, I think, into the one-way aspect. But even I sit with my phone in front of me just now that I have the notes on. I just go down, I go left. Oh look, there's news items. It's like, ah, crap. There is no way to escape. I mean, one of the ones that always used to get me a lot of the time was like the big news, like Sky News things in like public places, like big train stations. It's like, it's bad enough I need to share this train station with the mass man and the ethnic proles, but I also now need to share the train station with like constant 24/7 propaganda.
Well, the sheer amount of news is overwhelming, and most of it is just utterly banal. It's just noise. It's the CNN in the airport, like you said there, yes. It's the Sky News in the train station, but that doesn't stop even the most banal news being part of a tapestry of unreality.
Yes.
There's a quick one here. We're not going to go over too much of the behavioral science stuff because we've done it to death, to be honest with you. But the idea of defaults is very simple in that people suffer from inertia. They have what they refer to as status quo bias. So the preset option, what will happen if you do nothing, is what most people will do, because most people do not care about most subjects.
Yeah.
They do not care about most areas. And that really is one of the things that keeps, one, modern democratic states ticking over, and two, reveals that they are not genuine in the way they operate.
I mean, we'll just go for that second paragraph there. Defaults, when deployed correctly, can be very effective encouraging people to take a particular course of action. Another example of a default is an opt-out approach to a scheme or policy. Organ donation is commonly used to argue the effectiveness of opt-out policies, since donation rates are much higher in places with opt-out policy than those which use opt-in, where a person needs to take action to become an organ donor. And this is the thing that you know, in engaging with the front page news that's there, you're not reading it, but you are passively scanning over it every time you see it.
You didn't notice it, but your brain did.
Yes, but it notices you.
Yes. Well, the thing is, with algorithms and with capture of data and with all the different aggregate statistics they have access to, yes, the news does notice you. But I take us through kind of some base principles of the informational environment, let's say, to be up our own arse slightly. It's almost impossible to escape the news cycle when you have a smartphone. It's also impossible to escape it at work, even.
Yeah.
When you open the homepage on any work computer, it will bring up the news. It'll bring up MSN, a lot of them now. Most people passively consume news. What the vast majority see are simply the most visible headlines. So it'll literally just be the BBC front page, the Sky front page, the top of the front page as
and
well.
This is, you know, these are almost sort of, to a certain extent, common complaints that were made about tabloids.
Yes.
And newspapers and magazines like Heat. But then along comes the internet, which is this sort of perfect anti-cultural weapon for aggregating all of this stuff into an even more sort of reaction-induced, but also passive engagement form.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately, if you participate in society in a curious way, if you participate in society, it is very difficult to avoid the news.
Mm.
In fact, it is expected that you will know what is in the headlines. It is expected that you will know what is on the news. It's expected that you will be up to date with the current thing, even more so than it was in the age of the newspaper.
Yes.
In fact, it was easier to police in the age of the newspaper because there was so much less news, in quotes. This is a soaking in effect when done on a daily basis. So that's kind of the bird's eye view level stuff here. A lot of that's quite obvious, but it's stuff that people don't think about and very obviously don't think about in the actions that they take.
Well, yeah, you've got an extra little bit here in the notes. We, and by extension yourselves, the viewers, are not the main target of this news media. If you watch this channel, it's very likely that you're an active seeker of information and not just a passive consumer of it. We know that the news cycle is false, yet we collectively still consume it, even if we do not do so passively. Checking every news story in detail is exhaustive and impossible, even for us at times.
Yes.
Which is why these take so much time to do, really. And therefore, you are likely to absorb many mistruths, even if you still have a low trust in media.
I'd like to try and make... A lot of people go, well, I don't watch the news. What are you talking about? Well, most people do. Most people consume news in a very particular way. And that tells us something, one, about the shape of mass society, and two, how media affects it.
Yes.
You are not the normal news consumer. You have to basically build a working model of a quote-unquote normie in your head, of somebody who is not as engaged in the news cycle as you are. Basically, to reach here, you have to go through many different hurdles.
Yes, I mean, I also consider as well, below us are the people who, this is going to sound maybe there's like the passive consumers.
Yeah.
And between, you know, the active consumers of it, which might be us, there is the passive reactors who aren't engaging with it in a wholly critical fashion in the way that they should, but merely using it as like a, I mean, we use the phrase red meat a lot, but a lot of that stuff very perfectly fits it. It's some seemingly lefty article that says something outrageous and people go, look, it's outrageous, and signal boost it.
Yes.
As if to say, look at our enemies showing themselves as stupid.
Bark, 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 bark.
As we get further towards it in the stream, you will find with a lot of these articles that they exist not really for this purpose, but to hide the lies and certain lies and also certain truths in the body of the text that people then don't acknowledge or deal with, and rather perpetuate a different narrative instead.
Thank you for the donation there. I'm not quite sure if you want it read out or not.
I think that was the guy in chat that was asking about whether or not Ko-Fi takes less.
I failed my mission to get Theakston's Mild up north. The best was nice. Yes. Yes, the best bitter is quite nice. That was you posting that. Well, well done, brief Theakston poster. Thank you, Ivan. Your coffee is very much appreciated. But yeah, the social media stuff, though, is the extra link in this chain. It makes it so that if you are on social media in any capacity, it is almost impossible, without muting the words as they come up, to avoid the news. You are saturated in it. And by being saturated in it, and by being unable to check all of it, you, by extension, even if you are not doing it consciously, will believe certain things that are not true that have been served you through the news cycle. I come across it all the time, because you don't have any alternate data. That's how hegemony works. This is a very kind of simple application of how hegemony works. Social media has been the primary way of consuming news since 2016. We have had, it's going to be coming up on 8 years now, once we get to 2024, of full spectrum social media news domination.
I mean, it has been over half a decade at this point of the primary source for a large amount of news is just Twitter.
Yes.
Where all the journalists are, it's where they all interact with each other, and partially where, if they're not engaged in any real investigative journalism, which none of them actually appear to be, they just scrape stories off of Twitter all day.
Yes,
that's if there's a real person involved in the process, which soon might not even be the case.
Well, X is a good example because, strangely enough, the reporting on the artist formerly known as Twitter is more honest than on other social media sites. What basically happens is the news media goes in and highlights stuff that they are doing that all the social media sites do. We're not going on a Twitter defense force thing here because Twitter is abhorrent. It is exactly the same as the rest of them.
No.
And is taking biometric and employment data from you, as they all are.
Yes, I mean, I will leave it at this one simple point that for what we need to do to make it into the next age, it needs to survive without Twitter.
Yes.
And at this current moment, it doesn't.
No.
And that should all concern everyone greatly, but it seems not.
Being on Twitter is trapping yourself in samsara.
Yes.
Do not do it.
but the boxcar is so cozy.
It's the coziest boxcar.
I don't know if there's any specific bits of the policies in here you wanted to get through.
Not really, no. I just wanted to talk about the fact that really you start to see quote-unquote more honest reporting about anti, you know, nominally anti-regime figures or heel figures, as someone like Elon Musk is. He's very much a heel. He's not a genuine dissident. But you will see bits breaking into the news cycle about what normally happens in places and then framed as bad when bad person do it. And that's how they kind of get around. Well, we did talk about this, is the big thing.
We've got another little bit here.
Yeah.
It's a function of hegemony, and this allows an informational environment where the very founding precepts are born of a stark unreality.
Yes.
How they get away with it is simple. Very few people double-check stories, and those who do have been labelled as cranks, weirdos, and conspiracy theorists since the dawn of newspapers. There used to be a booming trend in correcting or just trolling terrible news via comment sections, but it seems that this level of democratisation was one too far.
Yeah, it's quite amazing that we live in the age of the mass man. We do. The mass everything. Everything's supposed to be participatory. Everything's supposed to be crowdsourced. Everything's supposed to be...
It's bottom-up, it's grassroots, yeah, it's bottom-up. It's ethical, it's whatever.
And yet, it's true that the outpouring of the internet is the old, you know, person plus anonymity equals shitcock.
Yeah.
I'd rather have people yelling shitcock than yelling propaganda at me, which is...
Yeah. I suppose that was one of the things that at one point, the response to news media was almost 100% like dick butt. Followed instructions weren't concise enough, got dick stuck on ceiling fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Nonsense like clear, this, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. A cat is fine too.
But now that it's all become, the response itself has become politicised.
Yes.
And it's now become its own industry to respond. And it almost seems in a roundabout way that they are creating media for people to respond to.
It very much is response-based stuff out there. Mm. It is odd because BuzzFeed cottoned on to it in about 2014, honestly.
Yeah.
And it turbocharged them because people were constantly responding and reposting their stuff on Facebook. And that's what got them a lot
of their
algorithm.
I've got to load their shitty website up with all these ads on it to read 600 words of a story that's just going to make me angry and give them money.
You see, the news environment is also... It has not been democratised in the way that we were promised, put it that way. I'll get rid of that. One of, I think, the most telling examples of what I refer to as the big headline and the quiet correction is it's the piss dossier.
Yes.
It is the steel dossier. Yeah, when corrections are issued, it's really the... There's a quote that goes around out there. Was it falsehood flies and the truth comes limping after it? It's usually the truth getting its boots on and it's ascribed to Mark Twain.
Well, the falsehood has already bolted to the doors. And
this quote is from Jonathan Swift in The Examiner all the way back in 1710, which is a great example of kind of how long we've had things like The Examiner in Britain.
Yes. But as you go to say, even in these opportunities where someone like, you know, the one you've got here, The Washington Post, comes out and corrects its own story.
Yeah.
It takes the opportunity to consolidate what they admit is a false narrative in the correction.
Yes, it does. What they're doing is they're coming out doing the bare minimum. And they are trying to codify the rest of it. As a walrus said, if you try and talk to people about the events that go counter narrative, it's very that's crazy. Did you see the game last night?
Mm.
It's very changed the subject. But there were a lot of large corrections here. There's just a great one at the back here. Where it talks about the Steele dossier was the basis for the FBI's legal arguments for surveillance of Carter Page, a former Trump campaign advisor, during the 2016 campaign. A Justice Department inspector general later criticized the agency for failing to note doubts about the veracity of information in its application for court approval of the surveillance. This was a very big story, but the story before it was even bigger, and the corrections don't matter. The Washington Post is still around. The journalist didn't get fired. Nothing really happens. The whole point is that there's this idea that if you just get the truth across, if you just correct the record against the hegemony, that you are able to win. And the sad fact is that you don't.
Well, there is obviously as well to play into possibly another aspect of the sort of behavioural science bit, is that the falsehood is sensationalised, the truth is minimised.
The truth is, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's piss dossier, it's Donald Trump pissed on prostitutes in Kremlin, it's Russian spies, it's all these things that are big and bombastic. The correction is minor, and it's objective, and it's had all tone and emphasis or anything like that removed from it.
Yes.
There's not even the hint of righteous indignation that they were wrong to say that and they're right to say this now. You can almost tell through reading them at certain points that there was a begrudging admittance.
Yes. It's also 5 years later.
Yep.
And as we talked about, when I keep bringing up the Iraq inquiry, but government inquiries in the UK are one of the best ways of them diffusing any contentious topic, because they can just say, well, a committee's looking at it for 5 years. And by the time the committee's report comes out, nobody cares. That's a really example of this. It was a very, very big story, and it was abandoned eventually, but it doesn't matter. All that matters is that they were able to push it in the moment. And it's the timely factor of it, and the timely factor of online news that allows this to happen. Thank you for the £2 there, Melon, with the...
The long face.
It's the long face. Thank you for the long smiley face. the long face.
Well, there was a really recent example that I saw the other day that at first was going to become a bit of a discussion about some different things, which we'll bring in anyway, because on its own it's a bit interesting, but... Within this article, there is a single glaring, blazing example of them doing this.
Well, here's an example of a story that would seem to lean towards quote-unquote right-wing biases.
Stop the boats.
Yeah, it's a very stop the boats. It's a slightly red meat right-wing story. But as you start to read it, it falls apart. Here's the headline, and here's what you're supposed to think about it. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah.
Since you found it.
Fury as students are ruthlessly dumped from £200 a week luxury flats with gym and a cinema to make way for up to 405 asylum seekers as local MP blast university for wringing their hands.
Oi,
they might be able to hear that on the camera because it's a bit dry and warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, scroll down a bit further. Landlords have ruthlessly dumped students from an accommodation block after agreeing to a deal to move migrants into luxury halls instead. While university bosses are wringing their hands of the fiasco, a furious MP has said House Office plans to move hundreds Home Office. Close enough. Home Office plans to move hundreds of asylum seekers into 405-bed HD1 tower in Huddersfield, which is a cinema room and a gym, and where top-end studio flats cost £200 a week, have outraged Labour MP Barry Shearman. Like, all the details. It's the high-end flats, it's the cinema room, it's the gym. £200 a month, this is costing you a fortune. This is for the poor students, who, one, we all know are bloody Chinese anyway. But then they drop a little fact in towards the end of this
article. I'd like to say, the impression given is that students who are expecting to move into their flats have been and have been occupying the previous term have been given a last-minute refusal in the place of migrants. You are made to assume quite a few things here, but the headline and these paragraphs that are, as we'll get to, simply untrue. I'll try and find it in here. I'm on the wrong window, as I always am. But it's disappeared. Where's the stuff about the cladding gun?
It should be in here.
It's not. I can't find it. There we go. I can't. I think they might have altered this. Actually, that's not good.
Are we worth quickly grabbing a archive version of this or a Wayback Machined version of it? Because they appear to have got rid of the very glaring fact that we wish to point out to people.
Yes.
Which is that later on in the article, which they have just scrubbed, it seems.
It's completely been scrubbed. This article's been scrubbed. That's odd. Well, what they go on to announce is the fact that actually these flats have been empty since 2019.
Yes.
And these flats have been empty because they were declared unfit for human habitation.
Give me a sec. I'll try and see if I can get an old version of this.
Yes, what I will do is I will quickly go out and get one of my archive snapshots. I did do. Don't worry about that one. Yeah, they seem to have scrubbed this, but it doesn't mention it here at all. The archive doesn't seem to have it either. But yes, the story did used to say, before they scrubbed it,
that this building was no longer viable to be used as private lets because it no longer met the cladding standards put forward after Grenfell. Because it had old style cladding on it, and this means it's a fire hazard, which means it's not acceptable for people to use it to be sold. So it's having migrants bust into it.
Yes.
But this would then identify to us that no student would have been told they were going to stay in this building as of either this year or possibly the previous 3 years before this.
No.
Because it's basically been, what would be the phrase, not designated, but marked down as essentially derelict or not usable.
It's been marked down as unfit for human habitation.
That would be closer to the
phrase. It would be extremely expensive. You have a building that's been set empty for 4 years. It's very difficult to get that into a structure to be private let. But yeah, I'm quite annoyed by that because it seems that the archive that I've got has gone missing. But
give me a second. Let me see if I can find this in the other one I looked up. I do have an older archive one.
Ah, that's fair enough. But the point we're trying to get to here, again, this is the reason. This is why the news media is so slippy, is because you can have things like stealth edits. You can have that. But they are focusing here, really, on the red meat stop the boast aspect. But this is actually a housing stock story. We'll mostly be using the Daily Mail article, but for those outlets with paywalls, the operative information about cladding and the habitation details is either entirely missing or below the fold and below a paywall.
Yes, sorry, I've got it here. This is from a longer form version of the very same Daily Mail article.
So there's two versions of this article, one that has the information and one that does not.
Yeah, let me
Even tripped up by it.
I'll post it in the Discord.
Yes, we were even tripped up by it. But ladies and gentlemen, you can't stop us from finding the correct story.
No, because this one's like some weird version. I'll put it in the general bit of the...
Yeah,
this version of the story is like written in like this sort of simpering tone for some 18-year-old bird that's off to study bloody international business.
Here we go. Yeah. Huddersfield University students and other tenants were given just 3 hours to pick their belongings and leave Kingfisher Court. Oh no, the migrants are coming. But that was in August 2019, when the West Yorkshire Fire Brigade safety officers uncovered Grenfell Tower-type risks. Since then, new cladding has been fitted to the buildings. By the way, that doesn't fully solve the problems with the buildings. There's a lot more fire code problems with buildings than just cladding.
Anyone that would have saw my thread about this on Twitter that I put up the other day when this story was fresh, is that it puts forward two very interesting sort of side questions. One, how the hell are they going to build enough buildings for everyone if they've declared that everything, you know, say built between the late 90s and early 2000s that is a mid-rise or tower block is illegal because of the cladding that's on it. The Australian government has already found out that the cladding that they were planning to use made out of polystyrene doesn't work and is just as dangerous. So, you know, where do we send all the people we're bringing in? And furthermore, is it possibly a consequence of the fact that all these old hotels, all these old school buildings, all these old military camps, all these old public utilities buildings, all these hotels and student accommodation buildings, what if it's just that they can't rent them to normal people and that's why they're filling them with migrants? And furthermore, why are they knowingly, at least as far as they are concerned, putting these vulnerable migrants, hundreds of them, who seem to be like quite likely to start a fire on their own behalf, into fire traps? Their own fire traps that they've admitted. It's like they're actually manufacturing the disaster before us, leaving all the hints there, and we basically have to sit here biting our nails waiting for it to happen.
Yes. It's interesting that we're having what is a building safety story turned into a migrant story, when Grenfell Tower, which was a migrant story that was turned into a building safety story, is quite an interesting one. But here we have, again, there's one version of this article that mentions this operative fact. That this building
I think
is
the other,
not...
the other one did at one point, but it doesn't seem to anymore.
No, the old version did. It had it more briefly written, but we've had to go to a longer form version of the same Daily Mail article to find it. The Telegraph article doesn't have it. It doesn't have anything about the cladding.
And they've even got more small boats and Albanians pish.
Yeah, it doesn't have anything about the cladding. If I search for it, it has nothing about 2019 in there. So the Telegraph article...
Even if you look up Grenfell...
You wouldn't know about it, yeah. Here, if you look, the BBC doesn't have it either. So there is one long-form Daily Mail article from which this story seemed to originate. That was the original version that has the operative detail that the building has been empty for 4 years. And it's very likely that they would be unable to put private tenants in there. But this is just one news story. This is an exhaustive exploration of a new story that is false in an interesting way that is meant to appeal effectively to our biases. It's not particularly glamorous. It's not something the Daily Mail is going to be taken to task over. But even in these supposedly banal stories, oh, student housing used as migrant center, brr, brr, there's all kinds of sub-themes and sub-lies in it, and all of these different aspects of unreality that would lead you to share this story uncritically.
And without, go, boo, migrants, yeah, boo, this.
But it's a larger story than that, and it's a story that's unfolding all over the UK. It's a good example, really, of below the fold or above the fold.
Mm.
What we have is a detail that is buried in a Daily Mail article that's been copied by others, and that detail hasn't been copied. God damn, I hate the cookie stuff. But it's a very, very simple piece of behavioral science that the average difference in how users treat info above and below the fold is 84%. Basically, above the fold and below the fold means
above and below the paywall.
Yeah, or above and below just the top of the page. This section of the page here, if you see this kind of example page here, 80 to 90% of people will not go beyond this.
Mm.
Most people do not scroll pages. They don't look at other information. And it is as high as it says here. Loads of stuff bear this out. From the stuff I've seen, it is about 75 to 90. This is on the higher end at 84. But huge drop-off in people that will look at it. And this is one of the normal modus operandi of how the news gets away with lying.
Well, this is just a general phenomena with content and human behavior that they have totally taken advantage of,
yes,
which is that for the vast majority of people, attention spans are short. They'll absorb the headline, they'll maybe absorb the subtitle, and everything else after that just sort of blurs into the rest of the day. But the headline, especially if it's enraging, or it makes you sad, or it makes you happy, you know, that sticks. The emotional bit sticks and becomes a lot more vibrant and full than, say, for example, the details that would indicate the fact that the actual narrative and the emotion they're trying to create out of the story is false.
Yes. The story itself is, in a very real sense, not real. Or at least it's not real in the way that you think it is. Finding out that the building has in fact been empty for 4 years puts a very different spin on the sob stories of these students. And it's to do with behavioral defaults. God damn, that's the factometer. But a lot of
beep,
this,
beep, 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 beep,
really, so often you will find it. I'm just going to quickly put this back up on screen. I'm sorting through some other stuff.
Well, I can go through some of
this
stuff.
Yeah, this is why you will see so often the conflict of headline and opening paragraph with the latter paragraphs of the article. We see a mini cycle of loud headline and quiet retraction played out on the page dozens of times a day. And it's impossible to avoid if you skim the news media, which everyone does to filter out stories of interest. You might not have noticed it, but your brain did. Again, I see you Bosco chewing chat. I've already been gotten baited enough by made-up news. It's so tiresome. It is, and it's meant to be. It's meant to be exhausting. All of this fake news narrative we see as the kind of passé preserve of the establishment is quite powerful because it tires people out. It makes the idea of filtering news feel daunting to people. But the very idea that you can filter news, I believe, is something that we are sadly mistaken about in,
yes,
some ways.
I mean, I think this is the reason why we tend, when we use things as examples,
yeah,
we either use ones that are so simply just a fact,
yeah,
or are very deliberate acts of contradiction. I mean, that's sometimes why I find it so useful just to go to like the end of an article and see what they have to say as the closing paragraph. Because the amount of times you've read something, they go, X is Y.
Yeah.
Subtitle. Here's why X really is Y. Conclusion to the article. Well, this is why X might not actually be Y. It's like, well, you know, what was the purpose of all of this article then, if you're going to get to a point at the bottom where you see actually what we said at the top line wasn't true?
Well, again, what it is because that they know people aren't going to read the article. Again, you will probably read the article if you're on our audience because you're somebody who seeks out information. Very clearly, we have a very different audience than most of the mass. But you will not always be able to do that. And it is kind of a losing war. To go back to the stuff in the flats, 75 to 90% of people will have not seen the fact that those flats were not occupied.
No.
And those that did see it, it may not have registered with many of them.
It was all over Twitter. There's David Curtin and all the Heritage people and Lawrence Fox and Nigel Farage, and everyone's really, really angry because those student flats have been given to migrants when good students should have them. When good students were never going to get them.
No. What we can glean from the existing information we already know, I can't see for your thing there.
Oops.
We already know is that flats are likely not fully up to code, and the only people that could live in them are migrants underwritten by the Home Office. This is a similar story to many others and seems to be a narrative attempt to hide the fact much of Britain's housing stock is not fit to be occupied by anyone except migrants. The migrant hotels we use out of desperation in many cases, from the owners as much as desperation from the government. It is clear during the post-lockdown many struggled with fluctuations in business and effectively went bust prior to the usage of migrant centres, with scattered cases of mass firings. This use of migrant hotels further degrades them as housing stock and would be unwise for a business hoping to sell on a going concern or operate as a hotel again. We've been through some of the building code stuff before when we did our state of new build stream. But it really is this story is not what it appears. And when you see a lot of the, you know, usage of building stories, like migrants here, migrants there, migrants everywhere, you have to know, kind of from a landlord building use point of view, that for them to even consider doing that, that must be a building that they do not think is a going concern.
No.
You don't put migrants in a building that you could get higher rents out of. That is suicide. It doesn't matter how much the government is offering you, you will get back a ruined building.
Yes.
People know this. And it seems that the real story is the fact that business owners are giving up on large parts of their UK property portfolio, which is a terrible indicator.
Shall I go for the rest?
You go for
the confluence of this is twofold. The building landlord will have made the calculation that the lifetime of the building and longer-term yields from private rentals are likely not long enough and big enough to justify the maintenance bar the bare minimum for low-bar migrant habitation. And latterly, the Home Office themselves have probably been involved in clearing cladding on contingency of building usage, and this was simply not announced until now. This will be increasingly common, by the way, as we've spoken of the cladding crisis and our new build stream, as you had up there.
Yes.
And I think again, you know, we talked the other week about food security. The government, or because of government policies, we import 80% of our food. Because of government policies, we import 1 million people a year. Because of government policies, we're getting rid of farmland. That's not sustainable. Because of government policies, we import 1 million people a year. We're tearing buildings down like nobody's business because they're not suitable.
Yeah.
But also, all the new buildings that have been built and are currently being built now are also being built into an unsuitable state because the government's going to have to turn around in a couple of years and say, oh, by the way, that new post-Grenfell safe cladding that we developed doesn't work and is possibly just as bad. And then they throw an extra spanner into the works by making sure that the people in the quote-unquote vulnerable living situation are the people that they would then create the biggest hubbub about if they happen to be hurt because of that living situation.
Yes. We've been through a bit, I've wrote out here, but there's a lot of information that relies on knowledge of both the landlord side of building management, building codes, and existing news in regards of cladding and application of that knowledge to kind of a below-the-fold section of a lengthy article. I had to go in there, dig out the information, and I had to apply my knowledge of the building sector to it, to be able to arrive here. Now imagine doing this process for every single article, not just on the Daily Mail, but every major newspaper in Britain. And that's not all the news sources, it's just the major newspapers. That's completely impossible. There's this idea, especially on Twitter and other places, that we will simply build our own fact checkers.
Yes.
That we will have the community notes, we will counter the lies, and we will fight in the narrative war. But the informational war is rigged. There's no way to do this. The news you see on an everyday basis, even the ones that seem to appeal to your biases, are utterly compromised.
Yeah.
And it is a completely impossible, like, losing battle to try and fight the fact checkers, as it were. You cannot fight the information war.
As a quick aside, I just want to say thanks there to Ben Gale, who has decided to become a year subscriber on the Substack and send us basically 40 quid for it. Oh. I see you around on Twitter and other places. So thank you for that, Ben. And amongst all the other people who have recently signed up for the Substack as well, seeing as how there's a couple more paid things on it.
Yes, thank you very much, guys. But there is something to be said, really, about the rise of the fact checker. And the fact that you are not on a level playing field. Nothing is more indicative of the modern political discourse than the fact checker.
You're missing. Oh no, it was the thing you had earlier on, right? Fair enough.
Yeah, no, it's the little truthometer, just the most Reddit thing that's ever existed is the truthometer.
I don't know. I have a much better idea of what proper fact checking is.
To be fair, this is our version of fact checking.
Yeah, this post was black checked by real American brothers. No lie here, nigga.
you'll see this occasionally as we go forward. But yes, the fact checker here. I've got a little spiel here, but people have celebrated the idea of having more fact checkers, but the entire information environment is meant to dominate and destroy any kind of distant activity by design. Social media, as we described in both our social media fake and gay stream and our prison stream, was developed in conjunction with security services to harvest and disseminate information in a tightly controlled way. Engaging in the process is simply widening the process, much like all aspects of democracy. If you have fact check and counter fact check of the current thing, you are still talking about the current thing. It doesn't matter if you are against it. It doesn't matter if you're for it, you are still engaging with the current thing. And that really is what all of this relies on. It relies on the perpetuation of dialectic. It relies on the ever widening of arbitration, really, of all these different processes that mean instead of talking about the issues at hand, we're talking about whether or not the fact check of the issues is correct.
Yes.
It's more surrogate activism. There's a quick one here from The Spectator, just to give you an idea here. Foreign Office blows 2.5 million on disinformation index. The retrenchment and savings are very much the buzzword over in King Charles Street. There's a lot of talk about fierce and draconian reductions in foreign aid spending, with James Cleverly warning that money is tight. So Mr. S was surprised to discover that the Foreign Office will spend at least 2.5 million on the controversial Global Disinformation Index.
God.
The GDI, and I don't want to go over too much of this, but what this is something that presents itself as an NGO.
It's neutral and fact-based, of course.
Yes.
Look at all this, the organizations supporting it there.
Twitch, MediaMath, there's a lot
of Code for Africa.
Yeah.
There's also some mad charities and stuff there.
Again, if you were, without a reference point, to click on this as an outside person, our mission is to catalyze change. We aim to disrupt the business model of disinformation, breaking the perverse incentives that exist to create and disseminate disinformation online. You wouldn't realize that this is a £2.5 million project of the UK government just by looking at this.
Mm.
You'd have to go through it backwards like we did. You'd have to research it. There is really nothing here that says that. And because it's the UK government who set it up, who are we? It basically talks about disinformation has become a business. Today's internet business models reward engagement above all else. These models monetize attention without considering the quality of content garnering that attention or the harm that may result. They're basically doing what we're talking about, but for the other direction.
Yep.
They're talking about, oh no, you can control the information environment.
There is a robust and growing community of industry, policy, and civil society advocates pressing for reform of this ecosystem. They all need data to inform their actions.
Yeah.
I mean, what this will do as well as an NGO will provide non-governmental, non-biased research and support to boost something like the online safety bill.
I love that. Independence and neutrality. GDI does not take funding from media companies or grants from technology companies. Our funding comes from a wide range of sources, including governments. So you're not independent or neutral because you're funded by the government. You are just the government. Yeah, all of this is allowed to go on because, as we keep saying, they are in power and you are not. You cannot fight an informational war. You are standing against the tide and it is simply washing past you.
Who are the founders here? Tickle my fancy for a moment.
Claire Mulford is the co-founder and CEO. international business leaders.
Experienced CEO in the commercial and not for
profit. MTV.
Sector. MTV Nordics. Currently, Claire also serves on the Global Growth Board for the Conscious Advertising Network and on the board of EDMO. Claire was a founding board member of Girls Not Brides, the Global Coalition to End Child Marriage. Daniel J. Rogers is the co-founder and executive director of the GDI. Prior to founding GDI, he founded and led Terbrium Labs, an information security and dark web intelligence startup before that worked in the U.S. intelligence community. Dr. Rogers also serves as an adjunct professor at NYU's Center for Global Affairs and as a security fellow of the Truman National Security Project.
So he's just a spook. They're just NGO people and spooks. But these are your fact checkers. And this is the news environment that people live in. And again, if you were presented this, you would just assume it was another NGO. You wouldn't know that this was just directly the UK government.
Hmm.
And it doesn't really matter how many scandals the fact checkers have, the anti-hate groups. Fact checkers and anti-hate groups can survive any scandal as they receive regime backing. And by the way, archiving is just free. You can just do it. But yeah, Snopes retracts 60 articles plagiarized by Cohn founder, our staffer Gussard. The fact-checking site has banned David Mickelson, who owns half the company, from writing articles after BuzzFeed News investigation prompted him. So Snopes, supposedly the fact-checker in chief, has went out and plagiarized a bunch of stuff.
They've had to fact-check their own people.
Yeah. And all of this is supposed to rely on absolute kind of trust and reliability from the fact checkers. But as that can never be the case, you have an environment in which there are these running scandals, but they never seem to damage the fact checkers or anti-hate organizations. It doesn't matter how much mud you fling at them, because they are an arm of the regime. You are not engaging in a marketplace of ideas. And I see this so often that people will scoff at the marketplace of ideas and then try and engage in it.
Yes. There's no such thing as a marketplace of ideas. But watch me engage with some sort of journalist on Twitter as if we were engaging on a level playing field.
Well, back in 2018, the Southern Poverty Law Center basically detonated and had to give a multi-million dollar settlement to multiple people, most notably, what's he called here?
Majid Nawaz.
Majid Nawaz, after he described him as an anti-Muslim extremist. But this was supposed to be the end of the SPLC. This was supposed to be the SPLC's reckoning. They had to come out and apologize and pay multi-million dollar settlements, and they're still quoted all over the place. There's still all of their reports. They still do the Hope Not Hate thing. SPLC's Year in Hate and Extremism report identifies 24 active hate and anti-government extremist groups in Georgia.
Hey, you want to see a worked example of all of this before your very eyes? Look at what doesn't happen to the ADL over the next few months.
Yes, this is exactly, as an aside, this is why trying to fight something like the ADL with hashtag activism is a result of severe brain damage of people's engagement with the information environment. It's not what spurred this stream, but it's a good example of it, that the SPLC was effectively handed a legal body blow where they became an outfit that was known for defaming people, and yet they still managed to perform their kind of fact-check hate or anti-hate organization function within the regime.
And also
uninterrupted, it seems.
Consult with security forces on the subject of extremism.
Yes, they are still within the pantheon. They're still going out there and naming people as hate groups, and they've still not been destroyed by all the lawfare against them. It doesn't matter because the game is rigged. And you can't go out naively and think that you can actually damage these people, because they will, you know, they will slip like jelly through your fingers.
Yep. Yes. I mean, we saw the embarrassment that was the one you're about to get up next, which is like the BBC disinformation bloody verify.
BBC Verify, yes.
I believe the woman that ran it then proceeded to embarrass herself by saying certain things about UKIP race man. Sorry, UKIP rape man on Twitter.
dear me. It was one of the biggest examples, is the BBC Verify thing. But it's so egregious that I believe they were trying to draw fire with it, even.
Yes.
They've been doing these kind of projects for quite a while. But there's a lot of hubbub. This is from the Press Gazette. There's loads of these boilerplate ones. BBC unveils Verify team of 60 journalists, it says, will be transparency in action. BBC News chief executive Deborah Turner said BBC Verify would pull back the curtain. This has all gone a bit sideways for them. They've been de-emphasising this quite heavily. Because really, the whole 60 journalists thing was a lie. The whole thing is just them coming out and trying to do a one-hand washes the other-hand thing of verifying their own news and trying to add an extra layer of trust to controversial topics that people are waning on in terms of their trust of the narrative. Yes. Because the BBC has some cachet still to burn, they've decided to burn it. People got on Ministry of Truth, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know why people thought that the BBC's reporting could get worse.
Yes.
Nothing effectively has changed. All that has changed is that you are reacting to it, is what's changed it. BBC Verify really is just a limp vertical of talking points, which they pretend have been independently verified, when really it's just an extension of their normal coverage. It is actually amazing in its banality. And it's ineffectualness, really. It is nothing. It exists as a concept. And they could very easily have done this without announcing it.
But look at the way that this allows them to engage in stuff, though, because we know they played up this Verify thing to be a lefty thing.
Yeah.
So why is it that, you know, the two of the stories I see right there, one of them is correcting whether or not Sunak's going to be anti-immigration. And then the other one's about geopolitical interests that are probably a load of nonsense anyway.
Yeah, it's them.
It's like they're trying to sell neocon shit to lefties and see if they'll lap it up like they normally do.
It is. It's very funny how centre of the line, establishment, neoliberal, neocon, uniparty, to borrow the cringe phrase, all of this is. This isn't like BuzzFeed. This isn't them going transphobic headlines in Daily Mail. This is them going, look at Ukraine's new Wonder Waffle.
Yep.
It's all very odd because it is sold to you in a certain way, especially with this Mariana Spring, who was supposed to be the face of BBC Verify, who was basically, apart from a podcast that nobody listens to on radio. You remember Radio 4? On Radio 4, that nobody listens to, has been brought out effectively as the BBC's canned Anita Sarkeesian.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed by how rehashed and lazy all of this is.
It almost feels like it's meant to look bad.
Yeah. It almost feels like it was meant to fail, and it almost feels like she was meant to take the heat for all of this. They've come out, they've played it up as this big Orwellian project, and it's gotten nowhere.
They did the same in America last year.
Yeah.
They had the White House disinformation unit, and they had this woman come out that was going to be the disinformation czar, and then she made an absolute arse of herself in the first interview she did. No one saw her again, and then they shut the unit down.
Sorry, Simicus, there's nothing good on Radio 4 because you have to dash for your radio because the archers might come on at any moment, and nobody wants that.
Do Radio 4 not even deal with the shipping broadcasts anymore?
That's a Gorgon Online, I believe.
Aww.
You can't even get West Easterly Rising Slowly anymore.
Or like that, or like the reports and like, oh, and a head of sheep at such and such a market will be such and such a price today.
I want to buy some sheep. Yeah. We should just get some sheep. But yeah, BBC journalist Mariana Spring is target among 80% of corporations' online abuse. Man, the BBC must get a very low amount of abuse. We need to pump these numbers up. These are rookie numbers. I don't know why there's a picture of Elon Musk there as well. Again, they're trying to make him into the heel. But this is all reheated 2015. The news media is playing into like the whole eternal 2015 thing. And you see it as, again, they are very loudly proclaiming that they are the arbiters of truth. And they are doing deliberate acts of overstep to make you engage with all of this stuff, rather than simply thinking that they've always been like this.
Yep.
The BBC's reporting cannot get any worse because they're a state-funded media outlet. They are the voice of the British establishment. They always have been, and they always will be. But this is something that'll make you think they have a position to advance to, then a position to retreat from.
Yes.
And it's also there to just wrap you up in, oh, look at this, Mariana Spring. Oh, isn't she terrible? Because everyone is going to go at her.
Yep.
Tory MP is a quote tweeting off a point. She's very much a heel.
2 minutes hate.
Not in the same way that Elon Musk is meant to be a cool heel.
That's like she's Emmanuel Goldstein.
She's a hole monitor,
yeah,
is what she is. And she's very deliberately being put forward as a hall monitor. And when people go, ah, fuck you, hall monitor, they go, oh, this poor hall monitor. No, 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 she's terrible. And it does bring people back into the 2015 kind of online harassment cycle.
I see Carl's asking a question in chat there, sort of relevant to... So, but I think throughout the whole stream, he's sort of suggesting, do we know how many people actively engage with established media? No. But because of the way the things are today, we can safely assume everyone's engaging with it on some level.
Unless you actually live
like,
in a cave.
You don't have a phone, you don't have a TV, you don't have a radio, you don't pass like road signs and shop fronts.
This is the background noise of modernity.
Yep.
You can tune it out, but you can never quite get rid of it. And because it's background noise, people accept it. And that really is how these everyday lies become so powerful. Because you'll half hear things, and to try and sound informed, you will often repeat them yourself.
Yep.
And it's again, we'll get into how to handle this, because there's a bit more to go through here. We've not quite got there yet. But this is something from, again... just a random Twitter user that got relatively popular because I was looking at stuff for BBC Verify in the 10-minute. Hey, BBC Verify team cover the Great Wall Files, how it started versus how it's going. They talk about social media posts denying the link between Greece wildfires and climate change spread online, according to BBC Verify. And BBC's talking about the fact that 79 people were arrested for arson for the Greek wildfires. But the problem is that you get this a lot. It feels good to do this, and it feels good to point out the lies and go, ooh, at it, but... it doesn't do anything.
No.
This is how they operate. Of course it's all lies. I don't know why people are surprised. Pointing it out doesn't do anything, as we keep saying.
I bet if you went into those Greece wildfires, 79 people arrested for arson articles, they still probably state, well, this, of course, doesn't explain all the fires.
Yes.
Some of which were, of course, the cause of climate change. Or the conditions were so perfect for people to engage in arson because of climate change. They're correcting the facts.
Well, it's just...
but they're keeping the narrative the same, and you can't correct the narrative.
There's a lot of people I see online who are quite well-meaning, who have tried to dedicate themselves to rebuffing all of the regime talking points. They become the anti-narrative people, and they think that simply combating the kind of the informational flow will bring about change, but it won't. A lot of people don't really care whether things are true or not. They just want background noise. They just want news. They want to feel informed. They don't care if they are informed. And ultimately, all you're doing is you're standing in the tide that's coming in.
Yeah.
It is moving past you. You are blocking what hits you, and it just goes around you. There is so much of this stuff.
You can
an absolute fire hose of it.
You can correct the facts, but you cannot actively correct the narrative in the minds of the people who assume it.
No. The point I would make is that you need to adjust really how you think about news. The sheer scale of the informational system and the structure of how it is built means you will simply be drowned out or quickly cycled out even if you do land a punch. Disbelief should be your default, but it's not simply inversion. The opposite of a lie is not necessarily the truth, often merely an inverted lie. The news tells you nothing in most cases, and you should not base your reality on it either way. There's been some clever tricks recently where a lot of media outlets have realized that a large group of people will believe the opposite of what they're saying.
Mm.
So a lot of the Q phenomenon was people tailoring news stories to that.
Yes.
And a lot of mainstream news in places or slightly below the headline news would be dedicated to effectively riling up Q people.
Well, I would look at just the examples, the way they cover leftism in the UK media just now.
Yeah,
we get article upon article for months and months and months about how lefties are doing this, it's disgusting. Lefties are doing this, it's wrong. Lefties are doing this and they think it's right. And then what we get afterwards is articles that say, well, they did this because they're ideological and they're extremists and they're racists and they're against equality. And yes, because you've invested in all the narrative stuff about them being evil, bad and wrong, and agreeing with the general premise that they have to be dealt with, you then subsequently accept the premise that they have to be dealt with under the guise of equality or post-racialism or whatever it is. You know, the one feeds into the other because you aren't given the time or the opportunity between one and two to put your hand up in an effective manner and go, no, we need to do them for these reasons, because that's not what you're there for. it's a one-way street.
Well, there's more to it, really. There's the omnipresent issue of how the news is framed. A suppressed news story could break through only for it to be framed in a way that neuters it, like the reframing of immigration as a housing crisis implicit in the Daily Mail story went over. I mean, we didn't mention it when we went over it, but that story really is also another brick in the wall of not immigration in crisis, but housing crisis.
Yes.
There's no questioning in the supposedly anti-immigrant Daily Mail article whether or not the migrants should be here.
It's that they should be housed somewhere else.
Yes.
Along the Ricky Beshan lines, quite possibly.
It's very much out of the Policy Exchange report that people have begun to argue about where we put the migrants, not ask why they're here.
Yes.
And all the news is geared towards that. And you as an individual cannot combat that.
No.
It is not something that you can combat. And in doing so, you will often burn yourself out.
Yep.
Really, what there needs to be is a disconnection, or at least in a mental sense. You should study the news, because I've got the thing here. You should really study the news like Jade Goodall does. It's that image. It's fascinating. You should observe it as some kind of foreign behavior, rather than believing it has any bearing either way. Most of what you will read online cannot inform you either way. I will read a news story and I will go, this has told me nothing.
I actually know less than I did before.
And most of us trying to filter through news is doing that. Sometimes we'll pick up an interesting thing as a jumping off point, but very rarely will we engage with a news story like it's genuine. We've talked before, because the video we put out on Friday was about the fact that you can't trust statistics. You can't. One of the things that we find the challenge on making these is that it's so degraded in terms of what the information that you get, the studies, the endless empiricism, as it were, the conflicting facts, that it creates paralysis. And that's what a competing set of news narratives do. Even if you get on equal footing with the regime, you are still cancelling each other out.
Yes.
All you are doing is reaching a zero point.
It's not so much a mass hysteria as it is more a mass myopic schizophrenia or something like that.
But really what we have experienced has been the revolution of mass and scale of news.
Yeah.
We have seen, as mass society has formed, that news has become ever more fragmented. And the last thing I want to talk about is the amplifying effect that AI will have on all of this. Because honestly, the limiting factor right now is the fact that news has become a blue-collar job.
Mm.
Journalism, and especially kind of mid-level stuff, even at large outlets, has become a very poorly paid endeavor. A lot of people who are media folks, in quotes, are not particularly well compensated, which is why many of them come from wealthy backgrounds already. Many of them are existing elite class people, because that's the only way to do it. But If you dive in, again, there's a bit of an explainer here about the aerated concrete stuff here. If people want to read it, that's kind of in the document. But it's a big scandal that's forming in terms of the habitability of UK buildings, as you said. But if you look at AI stuff, you will have a bajillion stories that think they know about concrete.
Yes.
Coming from an AI that has simply skimmed, say, this article here about the explainer. Again, there's a headline here from The Guardian from 5 months ago. It keeps telling me, because apparently news stops being true when it's 5 months old, which is, I think, a very funny implication from all of this. But Mirror and Express owner publishes first articles written using AI. This is from March this year. But again, from January this year, a news site used AI to write articles. It was a journalistic disaster because the AI just filled in the gaps it had with stuff it made up.
Yep.
Like journalists do. But a person, a lot less subtle and
human sort of fashion.
But a person didn't lie, machine lied, so that's cause for concern. But as what I want to go through here, really, it's opened on archive, so this refreshed everything for some reason, is this story here from April in the New York Times here, because it's entitled ChatGTP is already changing how I do my job. And there are some just kind of amazing paragraphs in here. The one I want to highlight is the admission that what happened when they got the Trump indictment is that his managing editor some guy called Carlson, used it to get a summary. He used an AI to get a summary of a complex legal judgment and then published it as if it would be reliable. I want reporters to read the whole indictment and understand it extremely well, he told me. But in the moment of breaking news, Carlson just wanted the big picture. It did it, and it was helpful, he said.
Well, see, what catches me is the line above this.
Yeah.
Carlson told me ChatGPT functions as that editor. You're always available, spitballing friend. How do I make these lies softer and more convincing?
Yes. Well, it's just, the thing is that it doesn't matter if all of it is AI garbage. What they will be able to do is put out even more news.
Yes.
You will have actually breaking news every 10 minutes. The news cycle will shorten where you'll have a... Now we have news days, really. It used to be kind of a week-long news cycle. Really, it used to be months. But we used to have a week-long news cycle in the 24-hour...
It's minute to minute now.
Yeah, it is minute to minute now, really, because of social media. But it will become even more accelerated.
Isn't that interesting, though? That as the amount of news media that is available out there to consume skyrockets in a way that we've never seen before, people become less, not more informed.
Well, this is by Farhad Majood, who doesn't seem to trust himself to do his own job.
And he's Farhad Manju. But no, shouldn't it be the case that if we're reading loads of news about loads of things all the time, that we should be more informed? And yet, we are not.
Well, the disaster scenario here is we talked about when we talked about the Henry Jackson Society stuff way back in our Henry Jackson Society stream about the Mallard and the fact that they had put out a story. Their excuse was they had put out a story without reading it.
Yeah.
They hadn't read the content of the story and the editor hadn't. And they'd put it out and they apologized, blah, 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 blah. But what you get in most media is that a lot of articles are never read by another human being.
No.
The writer will write them. They will be possibly skimmed by a copy editor for egregious mistakes. And if it's a very controversial topic, they may go to a legal department, maybe, if you're a very large outlet. But most of these articles do not have time to go through an edit cycle. It's very common, as we learned when we challenged the Mallard, for a human being to not check a story once it's been submitted.
We see as well, how many times do we read, coincidentally, a piece from the BBC or The Guardian? Sometimes it's months old. There's still a spelling and grammar error, is
it? Yes. They're just riddled with them.
Yep.
But what we're heading towards now is news written by machine that will not be checked by an editor. The outlets won't check it. The people who are supposed to consuming it won't check it because 90% of people don't read past the fold.
And then the very small number of people out there who do want to check this stuff are going to come up against such a torrent of it that they're going to barely scratch the surface.
And it's also going to be gibberish.
Yes.
They'll be constantly going, the news is gibberish. And people go, what do you mean? I read the headline in that paragraph. I know what's going on. Mm. No, but if you read down, it mentions the fact that I am ChatGPT. You know, it could basically say screw Flanders 52 times.
Yeah.
You don't know. But there already is nobody checking the news. But when the news is being created by AI, there will be nobody writing the news. The news will simply be, it will be a summary of a summary of a summary.
It's what the internet was bound to always provide,
yes.
Which is just never-ending noise.
It will be noise that is written by nobody.
Just forever.
It will be noise that is written by nobody and is read by nobody.
No.
It will quite simply be the emptiest noise. And I think that's the greatest example of this environment of unreality that we can come to, where we have algorithms writing copy from other copy written by algorithms to be consumed by people who will never read past the headline. And that is the future of journalism. It is unfortunately unavoidable.
But it says here on the handle for the boxcar door, twist and it will unlock, and it won't unlock. That's so unfair.
We've got to that part of our stream where we're going to shill a little bit again. If you guys do want to support us, one of the best ways is the Antipolitics Substack.
You recently just put up a very long form piece on there that
yes,
was
I did.
Your pitch for the Witan last year.
It was my pitch. That's quite a spicy article on already called Pub Praxis, Demystifying Distant Action, which is basically about how we need Big Baz. Again, do drop us a like and comment down below, guys. Now, engagement, as gay as it all is, does help. So that is the free way. We are still fully monetized on YouTube. There's all the super chats and all that. If you're watching the VOD and you want to come around next time, again, we have the Ko-Fi. Thank you to the people who've donated to the stream. Thank you to our returning members.
Yes, thank you very much.
I see you there, Bill Wilson. I see John Morton in chat. I also saw somebody earlier, and I forgot to shout them out. But anyway, Yiz, thank you for holding the wrench. Ivan Grozny as well. So we do have thank you to our monthly supporters. That's basically half of what we get from YouTube right there.
Yes.
Is membership, so that is quite helpful. But apart from that, really, we just wanted to create this stream to give people a bit of a place to think differently.
Yes.
A lot of this stuff is stuff that people will go, well, that's obvious. But it's obvious, and then they don't act on it. It's something you have to be mindful of constantly.
Yep.
It's the way news is consumed. If you were born in the last 70 years, if you were born post-war, which is basically everybody who watches this stream, you consume news in a way and information in a way that's unheard of in human history. And it is a deliberate assault on your like mental fortitude.
Yep.
In the way that news is structured. Even just basic stuff like putting lies above the fold and corrections below the fold so you can have a lawyer go, well, we said the truth later on. It's so simple. It's so banal and boring, but it is this boring fire hose of tiring little lies that add up to a big lie. It adds up to a sea of information that you soak in. And you, as people say, you are not immune to propaganda.
No.
And it is very likely there are certain things, even just offhand facts that you believe and repeat, that are regime lies made up to undermine certain parts of a traditional society. And that is unavoidable, I'm afraid. Yes.
As an aside, as I mentioned earlier on the start of the stream, you'll be able to see us this Wednesday as we'll be doing a stream, but things might be a little bit spotty in future, but there is, of course, the backlog of stuff to go through, and we will always be back at some point or another to do more stuff. It's just a case of we can't sit here and literally do the article sifting thing for 6 hours two times a week, because I think most people would not actually enjoy that. And quite frankly, we want to go about this in a way that we would engage with this stuff.
Yeah, this isn't really trying to persuade you of anything. It's trying to arm you against a pattern of thinking that is a default.
Yes.
This is something that you have been made to fall into deliberately, and it's something that has been done to you. It is not something to be ashamed of, that you can't navigate an environment when it's weaponized against you. I think people need to be a bit more generous to themselves sometimes and realize that they are not somebody who is going to be immune to all of this. But anyway, I'm rambling a little now. So I will say, have yourselves a good evening.
Have a good Monday evening.
Yes, and we will see you
on Wednesday.
Yes, we will see you on Wednesday. Have a good one, friends.
Goodbye.
Bye.